In 1941, residents of Southern Oregon and Northern California voted to secede from the big population centers to the north and south and form their own state. Though that state now exists only in the mind, today we are going to meet some of the foodies who keep the spirit of independence alive and well in the mind. Today, we are going to meet the garagistes of the great state of Jefferson.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 566th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among a friend over there in Lyon who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards back at Broadcast Central in Santa Cruz, California, and producers Carol Stafford, Parmley Taft, and Kelsey Olson with us as well. Folks, welcome to the great state of Jefferson, a broad swath of Southern Oregon and Northern California, which, though legally tied to the states of California and Oregon, do maintain and harbor a spirit of independence that keeps things interesting. We are in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, which is, of course, is right in the heart of the great state of Jefferson. And we're going to meet some of the foodies who have banded together as RAGS, an interesting name for an organization, which is an acronym for Rogue Appalachian Garagiste Society. We hope to learn how these great folks hope to build an industry of fine food and wines from what is basically scratch. And we have half of Rogue Valley here to help us find an answer. I'm going to start today with Nancy Tappan, and I'm doing that because we have been working with Nancy in her Evans Creek Vineyard for, what, Nancy, this is our third time?
Third time, that's right. This is our third show.
And how many years have you been on the vineyard?
Since 1984, we planted our first block.
1984, and that's a long time. That's over 20 years you've been up there on the hill.
That's right.
Any progress?
I think we're finally starting to make fruit that produces great wine. And it's been a long, hard struggle, and we've made every mistake in the book, but I think we're starting to find some answers.
Well, your partner in this vineyard, Vernon Hickson, came up with an interesting notion that you share something in common with some characters in France. Vernon Hickson?
Yes, and those would be the garagistes. And I think I brought that word into currency, into the vocabulary here. It was Laura Lott's speech. Went from that point, once the word had been introduced, I said something like, we share a lot with them. Laura then went on to organize the whole thing and put together the group.
What exactly are the garagistes?
They were the scions of the old French families, the old wine families, who grew weary of their parents and their winemaking techniques and decided to do it themselves. And the only thing they had available to work in were garages. And they had some success. I followed them a while in the French press and French magazines. And they were an attractive lot, as these people are. And so that's how the word came to be introduced.
Garagistes. One thing I wanted to really introduce is as we go through all these wonderful people today is they all come from someplace else. So I'm going to find out where they come from. Nancy Tappan, where do you come from?
Los Angeles.
Brennan Hickson?
New York City.
Good. We're going to go to Laura, who's also part of the wine industry here. Laura, you latched on to this whole notion of the garagiste, and what did you do?
Well, a number of us produced either a single wine or a small number of wines, and it was very difficult to do public events with a limited number of wines. So I looked around at the group of small wineries and said, let's work together to do events, promote our wines, draw the public in, and explain to them what we're all about.
Well, one of the hardest things about small farmers is that they've traditionally been very independent. Like, I'll go my way, you go your way, and we'll build a nice fence between us, and that'll be that. So this whole notion of working together, does everybody just jump right on the bandwagon?
Well, not everybody is interested in participating. However, the wine industry and the viticultural industry is unique here in that we do support each other. We do share ideas, work crews occasionally. Just the synergy of becoming a playing power in the Oregon wine industry, it takes all of us to do it.
Where did you come from?
Alaska.
Alaska to the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon. Now, you are wearing a T-shirt that says Trium. What is that?
Trium is three vineyards, Nancy, Tapp, and Vernon Hickson, Randy and Rebecca Gold, Kurt, my husband, and myself. Three vineyards we all sold to the same wineries over the years, and one winemaker in particular inspired us, Sarah Powell, to work together to produce our wines. So our wine comes from all three vineyards. We have the privilege of selecting the best from each vineyard for Trium, and work with our winemaker, Peter Rosbeck, to create what we hope is classic wines from New World Fruit.
So this really is an example of working together then, of combining your efforts. Is it possible for a very, very small vineyard to make it on their own?
Typically, 10 acres is one full-time, round-the-year job. Producing about 3 to 4 tons is commercially viable. Each ton produces about 150 gallons of wine, so a home winemaker with 1 acre of grapes is going to be drinking a lot of wine.
Amen to that. I wanted to go to Dawn and talk a little bit about this whole notion of garage yeast. Nancy Tappan said you would be a great person to introduce this whole notion of the philosophy of the garage yeast. How would you go about doing that?
Well, I think we use that term with tongue planted firmly in cheek. I love our logo, which is a verdant wreath of vines with fruit suspended from them, and running through the whole thing is a very large wrench. We feel that we must not take this business too terribly seriously, and I think our interactions, our organization, or lack thereof, speaks volumes about that.
The garagistes being those in the garage, right?
Precisely.
You're from Madrone Mountain Winery?
That's right. We are producers of artisan dessert wines. We make the pudding wines or the sweet stickies in the group.
Wow. Now, where are you from, Don?
South Texas via Miami Beach.
And how did you end up in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon?
I wanted to make wine, and there are very, very few vineyards on Miami Beach. I had the opportunity to come here with my day job, and I think most of the folks here in the room either have or at one time had a day job, because God knows making wine is not a profitable venture. So I came here as the federal public defender for Southern Oregon.
And ended up with defending some people and growing some grapes.
I divided my time equally between the wine business and the methamphetamine business, yes.
Good, I'm going to go. We have a couple of minutes, so I'm going to try to get as many people introduced as I can. Russ?
Yes.
Give us your name and your winery.
I'm Russ Lyon, and my winery is Daisy Creek.
And from where did you come, Russ?
I came from Wheat Ridge, Colorado.
And you're a retired what?
I'm a retired Navy person, 22 and a half years.
And how did a Navy person get into grapes?
Quite by accident. We originally came to Oregon, and I was working for Oregon Institute of Technology, and then retired from there as well, and came over to the Valley to raise peaches. And bought some land and started with peaches and eventually put that on the shelf and got interested in grapes.
Well, let's talk for a minute a little bit about peaches, because the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, of course, is very famous for peaches. And who made it so?
Who made peaches famous? Harry and David.
And who are they?
Most definitely. They're folks who make fruit baskets and sell them nationwide.
And they really made the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon very famous for the fruit baskets, pears and whatnot.
Most definitely, yes. And they're still here doing a fabulous business this time of year.
Amen to them. Do you do fruit baskets?
No, we don't.
Let's go to the rest of your family. Wife, Dorothy? Oops, different one here. Russ, yes, you're the only one. Okay, let's go down to the... Do I have any more room? Okay, scoot up a little bit here. This is the Cliff Creek family. I'm going to have you introduce yourself. Vern, come here. Stand up. Vern's a radio guy, right?
Right. I do the twisting the wires and let somebody else do the talking. Though.
Well, you're doing the talking right now. Cliff Creek, where are you from?
Well, actually, I was born in Brookings, Oregon.
Okay, so you're a coast boy over on the coast. How did you come to the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon here?
Well, we sold a business we had and had a little extra money. So my brother and I...
Okay, I'm going to pick this up. We're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We're coming to you live today from the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, which is really the heart of the great state of Jefferson. Pick up your phone and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Right back. Please do. Stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here, and today we're coming to you live from the great state of Jefferson, which, of course, is a broad swath of land of Southern Oregon and Northern California. Way back in 1941, the folks of this neck of the woods voted to secede from California and Oregon and to say to heck with it, and they actually went so far as to hold a constitutional convention, and they elected a governor. But that was December 6, 1941, and next day, of course, Pearl Harbor happened, and that was the end of the great state of Jefferson, but not really, because it still exists in the independence of the people who live in this neck of the woods, and this independence is really on display here today as we talk to some of the foodies who are have moved into this neck of the woods and are really taking charge of building a whole new food chain. You know, when I first started looking around up here, it was kind of chicken fried steak country, and today we're looking at some absolutely wonderful wines and some beautiful cheeses and all kinds of wonderful foods that, you know, would really on a par with just about any place in the United States. As a matter of fact, we had some words to that effect. We're talking with the Garvin family right now from Cliff Creek. We had some word from the San Francisco Chronicle. What was the word?
That one again.
One of the girls, come here, Ruth. This is second generation?
Second generation. I have two older brothers and three nieces and a nephew, and we all participate. So, but we just got an email that we have been, we don't know which wine, but we're on the top 100 San Francisco Chronicle list.
So is that competing with the folks at Napa?
Yeah, it's actually Oregon, Washington, and Idaho wines. And it's coming out December 2nd, so then we'll probably know as well as you.
So that's, you know, we really are getting to the point where the world is coming to recognize this neck of the woods as being able to produce some fine foods and fine wines. And how did you get there?
Well, we started out as a vineyard. Our goal was really to grow grapefruit to sell to other winemakers. Which I think that was, again, all in our head, because anyone in this room that's vineyard people know pretty soon you're making your own wine. It took us about two harvests, and then we were throwing our hat into the winemaking circle.
And why is that?
Well, I think because you nurture these plants and you watch this beautiful fruit and you watch the winemakers get excited about it and you want to see the end product.
Do you actually go out there and stomp on the grapes yourself?
Well, at our harvest party, we had stomping, but we have 70 acres, so 150 tons. It's a lot to foot stomp, so we go with a more conventional method.
And do you work with another winemaker? Do you work with a winemaker that does these things for you?
We actually do what they call a custom crush agreement with a winemaker named Joe Dobbs, and he's well-known in the Oregon market. He's been in the wine industry for 20 years. We all looked at each other and said we didn't know how to make wine, so we thought maybe we should hire someone that did.
What does a custom crush mean? How does that work?
That just means that you, this winemaker makes wine for several other custom crush clients, so he's not just our winemaker. He has his own label and has other people that he makes wine for, but he makes our wine under the Cliff Creek.
Okay, good. Let's go back to Don Mix. And Don, how about you folks with that sweet dessert wine? Do you make your own?
We do not. We have also a custom crush contract. And our winemaker now is Joe Dobbs as well. Joe is a very talented winemaker who has roots in the Rogue Valley area and also in the Willamette Valley area.
So this sounds like a very critical part of the development of an industry. Then you have to have somebody who knows how to make the wines, right, and can work with everybody else. Let's go back to Russ. Russ at Daisy Creek, do you make your own wines?
We do not. We have a custom crush like the rest of the folks, except ours is done here in Rogue Valley at Roxy Ann Winery, and Gus Janeway is our winemaker.
Good. Let's go back to the folks at Trium here. Laura, how about you?
We have a winery license like everyone else here and have the ability to make our own wine. We contract with Peter Rossback as our winemaker. His own label is Chenane. One of the components of this is the support of the other wineries that have additional cooperage space so that we do not invest million-plus dollars to establish our individual wineries, but we support the other wineries by helping fill their space, fully employ a larger number of people, and just go to the winemakers that understand our fruit and understand our valley and can bring the best of our vineyards and our grapes into the wine.
Nancy Tappan, how about you folks at Evans Creek? Do you stomp your own grape?
No, we don't. We're, as part of Trium, we send the fruit up to Peter, and he has worked his magic.
Okay, good. So always helps to have somebody that really knows what they're up to. But it's not just wine, is it, that makes for a great industry? Let's talk with David here from Rogue Creamery. David, where are you from?
Originally from Olympia, Washington. And I was recruited here by Harry and David in the year 2000.
To do what?
Vice President of Product Design and Development.
Whoa, so you have some deep experience along these lines of developing food products, right?
I do, yeah. And so it was really natural for me to fit in this industry of artisan producers and growers. And I really, my partner Carrie Bryant and I wanted to branch out of the corporate life a little and open our own wine bar. And so that's really what connected us to cheese, as we were in the process of opening a wine bar and discovered a fledgling creamery in Central Point, Oregon.
Well, what relationship does cheese have with a wine bar?
Certainly. You know, one can't live by wine alone. So
there are some who try, right? But
and, you know, wine is pretty much a perfect food, but add another perfect food to that, cheese. And certainly cheese is perfect in so many respects. You need a little bit of fiber and a little bit of vitamin C, so combine that with wine and, wow.
Do you think you can develop a wine industry without a food industry? I mean, do the two, are they intricately connected? Can you get one industry without another?
Oh, no, you really need to bring both to the table for the total experience of the place. And certainly having the artisan foods and the artisan wines in the Rogue Valley and Applegate Valley really completes that experience of terroir, understanding the flavor of the place, the soil, the water, the climate, and of course, the personalities in this room.
You brought up an interesting word, terroir. What is that?
Well, it's certainly, terroir represents the taste of the place, and you really get that flavor of the place with the wines that are produced in both the Appalachians connected in the Rogue Valley and Applegate Valley. Terroir represents flavor that comes from water and minerals of the soil. Of course, you have the vines who are just reaching deeply into the earth and bringing that flavor up through the vines. And then you have the climate has a great deal. And certainly the Rogue Valley and Applegate Valley are unique and certainly represent a biodiversity of plants and land.
Let me ask you this. What is it about this neck of the woods that makes for a great cheese?
You know, it's history. The Rogue Creamery has been here over 70 years, and it's that legacy that was brought over from Europe, and certainly, like winemaking, cheesemaking is an old-world concept of preserving food, and all of us in this room have taken a new world twist and created these unique flavors that truly represent the place we live.
Did you come from a food background when you were a child? Were your family in agriculture?
I grew up on a cattle ranch. We raised registered polled herders.
Is there good grass around here for your cattle?
Oh, absolutely. Our cattle graze along the Rogue River, so there's natural native pasture, as well as some rye grass and orchard grass and clover mixed in. So they graze every day. They're bordered by the Rogue River.
There you go. Let's move on to, well, looks like we're just about out of time, but let me go back to this terroir. What is it about the terroir of the Rogue Valley that really makes it stand out from the rest of the world?
Certainly. I think, first of all, you have the personalities in this room, and these individuals, the winemakers, who bring the components together to bring these grapes and special varietals that are really representative of the flavors here.
So it's not just the environment, is it?
No, it's the people.
Good. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here today. We're way down deep in the heart of the great state of Jefferson. We're talking about the independent-minded people who have come together from all parts of the United States to develop an industry of food and wine here, and they are doing just that. They're coming across with some absolutely stunning products that are developing nationwide reputations, and this place is still just a little bit on the wild side, don't you think? A little bit of the wild, wild west still lives here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our adventure. Do stay tuned. Oregon, in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, we're getting ready to do a big food event here today. Nancy, what is this event that we're doing today?
The Rags Case Christmas Case Sale.
And Rags being?
Jackson County Experiment Station Extension Service.
And Rags being the Rogue Appalachian Garagiste Society. So we're meeting a lot of the people who are involved in this incredible organization. And Maria, introduce yourself.
I'm Maria Largespada from Longsword Vineyard.
And what does Longsword Vineyard grow?
We grow mostly Chardonnay, but we purchase grapes from other vineyards in the area and do rosé and Syrah also.
So you have a tasting room, right?
It's really more of a patio than a room. It actually doesn't have any walls. It's a patio right out in the vineyard.
Oh, so people can get really close to the action then. Do you make your own wine, or do you hire somebody else to do that work for you?
Actually, as with everyone else, we do custom crush. We started with Sarah Powell, and then Gus Janeway made some wines for us, and now Greg Pinance makes wines for us.
So you have other people do the work, and a lot of the work, but you do most of the work with all of those grapes, right?
Right. I do most of the vineyard work. My husband and I do, and my daughter do it mostly ourselves. But Greg does let us clean things. We get to clean tanks, the hoses, you know. So we get to be involved in both ends.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, being an independent wine, how do you go about getting along with all of these other independent wineries and work together? How do you find yourself working in this garagiste society?
Well, I'm from Indianapolis, like everyone else from somewhere else, and my husband and I found our vineyard for sale on the internet, so we knew no one here in Southern Oregon. But as it happened, we ran into Randy Gold of Trium. His sister sold us the property, and he introduced us to Laura and to Sarah, and we met people that way.
So you just kind of blew into the community with the intention of setting up a vineyard and going to work, right?
Well, yes. That said, we commuted until just this year between here and Indianapolis. So I'd be out here spring, summer, and fall picking for the vineyard, and I would spend winters back in Indianapolis.
That sounds like it. Good thing to be moving out here after all of that work. Well, Maria, what has working with these other folks done for you in building your vineyard and your winery?
Well, it's been a wonderful experience. I come from the pharmaceutical industry and grew up in the city, so I had no idea about farm life or how to make wine. So I found wonderful partners and mentors in this area, and everyone very willing to help and promote each other and help each other make the best wine that we can.
When you're new to a community, there are probably a lot of people out there that would like to take advantage of your naivete and charge you, what, $30,000 to do this and that. Does working with these other folks help you save money in that regard?
Oh, absolutely, because these are people coming from the same kinds of backgrounds. Different area, bought farms and start up and understand the costs involved and want to see each other succeed.
Amen to that. This is your daughter, Melinda. Say hello.
Hello.
Hey, you're the... do you think your parents are crazy?
Just as much as everyone else in the room, I guess.
And what did you do back in Indianapolis?
I actually was a student. I had just graduated from Portland State University. I've got my master's in social work, actually. So just moved out here for school, and then also they then moved out here in February, so I've been out here a bit longer, but not that much.
You know, with a master's in social work, how much of the vineyard industry do you see as social work?
Quite a bit. I always make it's an absolute joke that I'm going to say. I work with developmentally disabled adults, and and I say you're able to carry out a lot of the same kind of principles working at the Tasting Patios and working there.
And does your degree or your studies in social work help you with the development of the business?
Absolutely. There are a lot of the same principles. I also worked 4 years in the advertising business, and those principles go in the same with working with the developmentally disabled adults and promoting ideas for them, promoting ideas for the adults, and then the same thing goes around with doing with the winery and the vineyards, being able to the same advertising things of that sort.
Well, you know, going around the room so far, what we've seen are a lot of city people who have been involved in a lot of city people kinds of endeavors moving to the rural areas of Southern Oregon, and yet these skills that you develop working in the city seem to really be helping you develop this industry as we go along. Let's go to Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you, Michael?
What's your last name?
Fugis.
Fugis. And you're with Rising Sun?
Rising Sun Farms. We're a specialty food manufacturer, and we also have our own vineyard, and we are now making our own wine.
Well, let me ask you this. Does the wine make the food, or does the food make the wine?
I think when I taste a wine, I normally say, this wine would be perfect with lamb roast or something. So I tend to go the opposite way from most people.
Which is? What do you mean?
most people go, oh, well, we're going to have steak, so we're going to have red wine. Or white wine with fish.
Can you have a good meal without great wine?
With great company, you can have anything. It all works.
And how did you come to the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon?
I grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, and came by way of the Seven Seas. My husband and I were sailors, and so we wanted a great place to raise children and to have a farm, live a simple life, and so we loved it.
Tell us about how you made your first product.
Well, I was actually a chef on ocean racing yachts, and I would go throughout the marketplaces in the world, and there the markets were fresh, and on ocean racing yachts there's no refrigeration, so I would make customs anywhere I went. Different herbs and different spices, and you could always cook the pasta in seawater. And so when we came to the land, it was sort of a natural to make pesto. So we started out with pesto sauces, and it was the only herb that all of the deer and the elk and the squirrels and everybody else didn't eat. So we became an organic herb farm.
Tell us how you made your first pesto for sale.
I made it. We were living in what is called a yurt, and we picked our basil and our garlic, and we fired up the generator and made pesto and took it into the Ashland Community Food Store. And I said, what do you think about selling this? And I said, we'll do it on consignment. And he said, okay. So I started demoing it, and first people at that time, it was 1983, people would say, what is this? It's green. It tastes wonderful, but I'm not so sure. Where's the red sauce? And so it would took you know, a lot of time to get people to eat green sauce.
And they ate it, though, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and we've won many awards for our pesto sauce, so it's good. And now pesto's an everyday item.
And so what your farm since 1980 has experienced substantial growth.
Yeah, we started out sort of in the wilderness areas, and as we grew, we now bought another farm in 1991 in Phoenix, Oregon. So we're in the Rogue Valley, and we started the farm primarily because we wanted a clean area to grow food for people. We wanted organic, we wanted sustainable, and we thought the idea of putting poison on our food was a little strange. So, as sailors, we don't understand any farming techniques, so we had to sort of develop them as we went, and we made mistakes. And
so let me ask you this. How on earth do you go from being a sailor to being a farmer? I mean, if there's two professions in the world that are so diametrically opposed, being a sailor and being a farmer, did any of the skills that you developed, like you were a chef, right? So
I wasn't a trained chef. I was a chef on the job because I wanted to see the world. that was my into travel and experiencing lots of different foods. So the idea of a sailor turned farmer, my husband and I met one wonderful evening, and we both were sailors, and we looked at each other's eyes and said, we want to have children and raise them on a farm.
Instead of a racing yacht?
Right. And, yeah, and so that was our goal. When we came back to the United States, we found that everything was Velveeta cheese and processed foods, and nothing was fresh. And so what happened in the time that we were gone? And so we decided that fresh was best.
Well, so there you are, folks. We've worked our way around the room. We've learned some interesting things. Thing number one we've learned is that there are no farmers in here, or that there are no people who were born on farms and worked on farms. They're pretty much city people who have some incredibly eclectic skills. Television producers, magazine editors, radio station owners, Navy commander, right? Wow. A DA or a prosecuting attorney. Which one was it? Both. Small town, right? So we've learned that these people are really city people like you and I, and they've come to the country and developed quite an industry with wine and with foods. And see, wonder where we're going to take this. We set up an organization called the Garagiste Society. And what is it about the Garagiste that is going to allow you to compete in a world dominated by, what, Napa Valley?
Well, the Rogue Valley, unlike the Napa Valley, is an appellation of microclimates, which means that we can produce not just a Cabernet or a Merlot or a Pinot Noir. We can do all of those, and given the proper microclimate, do them exceptionally well. Given that we may be producing a Pinot Noir in a small quantity, the Garagistes allow us to, the synergy, to work together to promote not just our wine, but the entire region as a destination, as a wine region. We tend to call it the world of wine because of the diversity here. And we don't want to become known as a monoculture. We want to incorporate all of the foods that are produced here. We want to be accessible to anyone that wants to experience our wines, not someone that can merely pay $5,000 or $6,000 for a case of wine. We want to be the face and the voice of our industry. We want the people that come here to experience it in our tasting rooms, in our vineyards, and hear the story directly from us. So we also are very much focused on sustainability from the ground up. What we put into the soil is what we put in our mouths. We want to be sure that the wines that we produce showcase the best of our industry and pair well with all of the foods produced here, the cheeses, the truffles, the wonderful breads, the organic meats. What grows here goes well with the wine that's produced here.
You said something earlier that kind of caught my attention. I was wondering about it, and that's with respect to the topography and the microclimates in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, whereas the Napa Valley is pretty much a big, huge, flat valley. The Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon is a lot of hills and valleys and little corners and nooks and crannies. And does that kind of environment not make it more suitable for the production of food and wines? I mean, it seems like traditionally good wines have always grown on slopes, and good cows grow on fat on the grasses of the valley. What do you think, David, from Rogue Creamery? Does the microclimates have a lot to do with the variety of foods here?
Oh, absolutely. In our case, our cows are grazing on the pasture 10 months out of 12, and certainly that's where the unique flavor of our milk comes from, and certainly makes our cheese unique and is recognized worldwide as a flavor that is only created here in the Rogue Valley.
Well, do you see a time, as has happened in the Napa Valley, where those beautiful pastures are taken over by vineyards?
You know, there certainly is threat, but of that happening, and I think that the community here in Southern Oregon is very watchful and watching the urban growth very closely, and we're very much trying to defend the farmland and agricultural land here in Oregon. It's very important to us. It truly represents who we are and what we eat and what we bring to the table to share with friends and family.
Which is what?
We bring, of course, produce and cheese and fruit and wine to share with our family, and certainly it represents the purity of our place, our landscape, and it represents the healthful environment that we live in, and it's certainly for all of us, it's a very transparent lifestyle.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I see I ran a little long, but that's such is life. Dave can pick us up. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're live up here in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, which is the heart of the great state of Jefferson. We're talking with all kinds of people who are from someplace else who have come to the Rogue Valley and made it their home, and in that home they're making some absolutely great food and wines and changing the shape of the Southern Oregon appellation for food and making it really something that stands out in the world. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to find out just how we're going to go about becoming something that is never going to be a Napa Valley, right? You stay tuned, right back. we're back. Michael Olson here, and we're up here in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon. We're talking with the people who are really changing the landscape of this industry. We're going to go with Laura from Trium. Laura, you talked about the growth of this industry. To what extent has it grown since you folks came here?
We planted our first grapes in 1990. At that point, there were 350 acres of grapes and five active wineries. Now there's over 2,000, closer to 3,000 acres of grapes and 23 active winery licenses. The number of tasting rooms has increased beyond the 23 through the grower privilege license and the custom crush facilities that have opened, because each of us that produces wine through a custom crush facility has the right to have a tasting room as well. So the visitor that comes to the Rogue Valley has many days of opportunities to taste the wine and the foods, because like Rogue Creamery, they serve wines as well. They get to experience all of the food potential in this valley.
Bring a designated driver. What's the most fun that you? What is the most important thing you experience in making wine for this world?
Well, again, like many of us in this room, we actually do the work in our vineyards. We're unfortunately, to some extent, not Falcon Crest. We don't get to sit on the porch and taste the wine and watch everybody else do the work. We do the work in the vineyard. Each of our vines is touched a minimum of 12 times a year. And at 1,000 vines an acre and 18 acres of grapes, that's a lot of touching the vines.
So touching the vines.
Being actively involved in what happens with the vines on the soil and then sharing that with people in the tasting room.
Good. Nancy Tappan from Evans Creek.
I would say don't ever lose sight of pursuing quality. Quality is all that counts.
Brennan Hickson from Evans Creek.
Ooh, what am I to answer?
You talked about driving the tractor.
Oh, yes. Well, I have a good time doing that. I enjoy that perhaps more than anything else I do.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Let's go over here. Russ from Daisy Creek.
Well, I think it's the support of other growers that I really have found just very pleasing and fulfilling to us as a family as well as a community.
Great. John Mixon from Madrone Mountain.
I have to say that in my last life, both as a prosecutor and as a defense lawyer, whenever I showed up, it was bad news no matter what. And the most important thing I think I found is the look on someone's face when you hand them a glass of very carefully made wine and they smile and they make a sound that shows how happy they are.
Great. Ruth?
I think for our family, my brothers and I grew up in a family business, but this is one where we all get dirty together and we all enjoy our wines together, and it really is a time that you learn to work with a group of people and share in all the joy. And when that end product, just like Don said, there's nothing, probably everyone in this room, when you are at a tasting table and you serve someone a glass of your wine and they have that smile.
Good. David, Rogue Creamery?
Sharing the food and the wine of this community worldwide and being a diplomat of the food and wine made here, it just makes me so proud. I was in Cheese in Bra, Italy over a month ago and shared a local wine made by Madrone Mountain, a late harvest diverse demeanor. You should have seen the faces.
Great. Okay, out of time. Doggone it. Missed a couple really quickly.
I used to make medicine. Now I make medicine for this role.
There you go. Folks, this has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson from the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, the heart of the great state of Jefferson. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.